Welcome to the HR Locker podcast. On today's show, we speak to Belinda Ganaway from Fathom XP. Fathom XP is an award-winning employee experience and culture activation agency made up of a network of coaches, design thinkers, and EX facilitators. Belinda's experience includes design thinking, learning design, team coaching, and facilitation. She co-authored a book called EX by Design in 2021 and speaks regularly at international HR, culture, and design thinking events. She's passionate about working with organizations that want to build a difference for their people and the communities they build. In this ever-changing world, the experience that your employees have throughout the entire employee lifecycle in your organization has never been more important. Great employee experience is built on trust, support, and collaboration in a meaningful, productive way. We asked Belinda to explain to us what exactly is employee experience, what makes for a great EX strategy, and how can you make it about the people and not the process? And we ask her how EX impacts on your employer brand. This is a podcast for any company that really wants to make some meaningful changes to their organizational structure. And we really hope you enjoy it.
We have Belinda Ganaway with us from Fathom XP to talk about all things employee experience. So thank you for taking the time today, Belinda.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
But Belinda, if you want to maybe introduce yourself to our listeners and what your background is.
Thank you. So I am director of Fathom XP. So Fathom XP is a culture activation agency. We are small but beautifully formed. We punched above our weight. So we work with lots of global organisations. So everybody from the International Olympic Committee to Nestle to Lego and many other organisations besides. And we work in sort of the whole area of employee experience and also organisational culture as well. My background is actually in journalism. I started life as a political journalist working in the UK Houses of Parliament, which I think I like to say that's where I first became really fascinated about organisational culture. I like to think of organisational culture being built up in layers, often over many, many years. UK Houses of Parliament is over a thousand years old, so it has many, many layers of culture. So that's where I started, but I think probably that the common thread to where I am now is about asking questions. Are just about being constantly intrigued about people and networks and communities and organisations. And that's really brought me through to this thread about where I am now and what I do now.
Wow, Belinda, I'm fascinated with that. In terms of the House of Commons, they must have, in terms of the culture, it must have reinvented itself 100 times at this stage. You know, it's an interesting case study.
Absolutely fascinating place. Yeah, it was my first sort of proper job out of university as well. So you don't know what you don't know.
Yes.
So, of course, it all seemed terribly normal at the time. It's only looking back sort of 20 years later, I'm like, wow, what a place to start my career.
It was baptism of fire.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Belinda, we talk about employee experience, and it's definitely one of these buzzwords that's thrown around and companies are like, oh, we're doing employee experience. And I'm not so sure, but I stand to be corrected. I'm not so sure a lot of people understand what exactly employee experience is, or, you know, why they should be doing it, why they should care about it. So I suppose if we start at a base level of why, what is it?
Ah, okay. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And even the language about doing employee experience
exactly. Is
so fascinating, isn't it? So for me, it comes down to, you know, what is experience? But put it another way, it's experience somebody, a person has of you from the moment they've actually their first think about you in terms of being an employer to the moment they leave and way beyond that. Because the thing about experience is it's to do with emotions, and emotions last with us as memories. So, you know, I'm sure you can as well. Everybody listening also can remember the best and worst experience I've ever had at work. And that might have been last week or it might have been 30 years ago. So experiences last, they last as impressions and memories. So that's what we're really talking about. It's the emotional stuff. It's how we make somebody feel about us and the experience that they have with us. As I say, from the moment you first think about joining to the moment you leave and way beyond, which is why, you know, it's a whole different conversation about alumni, but which is why that point, the leaving point and the alumni is so important to the reputation and the ongoing vibrancy of an organization as an employer, massively important. Just to expand on that a little bit, if that's the what it is, that's kind of like why focus on it. for me, that's really interesting. When I first started working in this space or thinking about this space, I've sort of morphed from thinking about culture and the culture around digital transformation is where I sort of entered this world about 10 or 15 years ago. Started thinking about employee experience and talking about employee experience way before the metrics were really there to demonstrate the business case for focusing on it. What we can see now is that the business case, obviously, it impacts engagement. Yes, that's really important, how engaged somebody is. It impacts tenure. Yes, it impacts somebody's desire to want to come to work with you. This is all really important. But actually, the other metrics that we can now see really being hit by a better employee experience are things like innovation, things like customer experience, customer reputation, productivity. All of these things are so important right now. And what makes my job really exciting now is that the business case is just increasingly stronger and stronger as the years go by. There's so much more research that links the benefit of creating a great employee experience to those really, really tangible business outcomes.
And Belinda, one of the questions I get all the time is, when should you start implementing employee experience? And I always have the feedback, which again, you can disagree with me, Belinda, is you can't just start doing it. You're doing it already. From the moment somebody is, if you've employed somebody, you now have an employee experience, basically.
Exactly.
Positive or negative.
Yeah. Exactly. It's what we always say. If you don't think you're doing employee experience, you're mistaken, because of course, anybody who considers working for you or is working for you or has worked for you has had an experience. The only question that then remains, is it the experience that is right for them, right for the work, and right for your business? And those are three sort of, they're not competing, but they're sort of dancing elements, if you like. They're constantly in intention and overline and overlapping, so that, you know, is it right for your people? Is it right for the work? Is it right for your brand and your purpose and your values? Those three things are always at play, I think. So yeah, you're absolutely right. The question of whether or not you should do employee experience is relevant, because somebody's already having an experience. Obviously, if you employ somebody, they're exactly having an experience.
And I think as well, one of the other questions I have, well, that I usually get is, you know, at what journey, what stage should you implement it? So, and again, my feedback is, from the minute you put out an advertisement for a job, the experience has started.
Absolutely.
And when somebody leaves, you know, it's throughout, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that gets kind of big and scary, doesn't it? But you wouldn't think about your customers, your clients, whatever business you're in, you wouldn't leave that to chance. You know, that's, if you're growing a business, if you're an established business, you know, however small or large you are, you wouldn't leave your customer's experience to chance. And actually, we can no longer separate these two things. All the stats show that unless we look after our employee experience, our customer's experience will suffer. So why would we leave that to chance? I know that makes it big and scary. And there are, you know, we'll talk a little bit, I'm sure, about how to get started and how to think about it and how to make it more actionable, you know, especially if you're a business, not a huge business, you've got a lot on your plate. So where do you get started? So we'll talk about that. But yeah, you just can't not care about this stuff, because it's like not caring about your customer's experience. And that just makes no sense.
And I think it's interesting, and we'll go into it a bit more depth with the customer experience later on. But, you know, if you've got unhappy employees, and they're on the, you know, the cold face with customers, yes, more than likely they're not giving a good customer experience.
Yes.
And absolutely. So that's important. Absolutely. So the other bit I want to just have a quick chat about is, we're in this remote, hybrid, whatever workplace that people have at the moment. You know, it's no longer one fits all kind of workplace that we have. And I see companies having a lot of different cultures, you know, and even though they're different, you know, there isn't one size fits all either in terms of culture. So when you take into fact that you're trying to implement a culture that maybe you've gone through a workforce change in terms of remote and hybrid, you're now also trying to create a new onboarding experience in regards to remote and hybrid. Mm-hmm. And maybe a different kind of recruitment style, because you're now either remote or hybrid, or you're doing it online rather than meeting people face to face. What do you think are, I suppose, the pitfalls people have looked at in regards to marrying that culture with remote and hybrid for employee experience and the onboarding side? What do you think people have done really well, do you think?
Well, it's specific to onboarding or employee experience in general? Specific to onboarding. I'm doing a big onboarding project at the moment, actually, for a global pharmaceutical business. And you know, everybody wants what's best practice. What does good look like? And there are certain elements that are always good, but at the same time, it's always about designing for your people. And your people is always that holy trinity, if you like, about what is the nature of this organization? What our purpose and values? What are we here to do? What do we stand for? What is the nature of the work that people are doing? And then what is the nature of our people and their needs and expectations? So what best practice looks like will always fall in the middle of those things for those people. That said, in the book, so I co-authored a book on employee experience design with Emma Bridger, who is a psychologist, and she has been looking at what makes a great experience at work, and she's conducted a piece of research over more than 10 years now, and she's spoken to literally thousands of people in hundreds of organisations, and she's been able to boil down what creates a great experience at work into sort of 7 core elements. Now, as I say, everybody's individual, the work context, et cetera, et cetera. But she talks about magicka. So I'm going to just pull up my notes because I've got COVID brain and I won't remember all, which is meaningful. So a great experience, it's about what makes, not an okay, what makes a great experience at work. It's about meaningful work. It's about autonomy. It's about growth, impact, connection, challenge, and appreciation. So the Magicka model is covered extensively online. If you search for Magicka, it's got 2 C's in the middle, and Emma Bridges' name, you'll come up with this, you'll find this work, and it's also featured a lot in the book. Now, if you flip that back to what does that mean for where we work and what does it mean for onboarding, you can really think about the different elements of Magicka and how those should and could show up in onboarding. So how do you make it meaningful? How do you give people a sense of autonomy? How do you maybe not enable people to grow within the onboarding process, but actually at least enable to see where that's going to be? How do you help them have impact in their work as quickly as possible? Massively important. How do you help them create connection? And this is where I do see particularly remote onboarding falling down, is that we forget about the human bit. It's that we've got this right. You know, onboarding had been in so many organizations had been really done really, really well, and whatever you want to call it, and however you break it up, and that's an interesting conversation in its own right. You know, what is onboarding? What's orientation?
Or induction. But, totally different, yeah, apparently.
It's like, and I think this works. I was thinking through this morning, actually, in connection to something else. It's like if you invited somebody over for dinner, and you gave them a menu, and then you sat them in your dining room and said, yeah, choose what you want, and if you've got any questions, let me know, and then you disappear back into the kitchen. You'd be like, hang on a minute, what's going on? I thought I was here to, you know, it's about human connection. So if you want to get onboarding right, think about the human connection. Yes, people want to get paid on time. Yes, they want their laptop so they can start work. Yes, they want to know, you know, how to sign up for the private help, or whether it is. But actually, it's about connection. Don't just give them a menu of stuff to do and think about. Build those connections. And that starts before somebody joins. And you cannot underestimate the role of the line manager in this and the role that they play. And time again, I've just spoken to, we did some empathy interviews with 50 new hires for this organization from around the world in a variety of roles, from director level role down to sort of production level roles, and recent, you know, early career people, later, all of this. But when it works, it's about the people. And when it doesn't work, it's about the people. So there's no, well, I suppose there is, I was going to say there's no magic wand. There is a magic wand, but it's a very human-shaped magic wand. So if you want your onboarding to work, whatever that means and looks like to you, make it about people, not process. That's probably a very long answer.
No, I totally agree with you. We're 100% remote. And with that has come challenges in regards to onboarding, I won't lie. And one of the feedback I got from one of the guys who started was really simple. And if you think about that human connection, he was like, he said he doesn't even smoke, but what he wanted to do was go outside to have a cigarette with somebody and say, what were they talking about in there? What did that acronym mean? Yeah. You know, which is tiny, which is, so I think when you're onboarding is for sure, you can give them a list of at 9 o'clock, you're going to do it this, at 10 o'clock, you're going to do this, you're going to talk to this person at this stage. But how are you actually creating that they have a safe place to go? I don't know how to work my teams, or I'm not really sure how to do this bit. And it's that human connection, really, isn't it? That's
absolutely
that's the most important.
Yeah, yeah, I just keep coming back, and I really don't know if this analogy works, but it's the idea of going to somebody's house or going to a restaurant and just been given the menu and then just told, that's it. Text me.
Get on, okay. Hope you're okay.
give me some people to talk to, because that's fundamentally all organisations are, is a group of people doing stuff together. And when people do stuff together in a way that is, is joyful and productive and innovative, it's about the people.
I think when you look at the terms of, for want of a better analysis, the Maslow hierarchy of needs, you're looking at, they're getting paid, okay? Hopefully, let's presume you've ticked that box. So they've got their shelter, they've got everything else. So everything else needs to be in addition to that. So they want to make sure that they're making connections. They want to make sure that they're maybe learning a bit, that they're developing themselves. And that's in essence is your, once you have the basics right of that, they can do their job. You've done your recruitment correctly. They can do their job. They're qualified for their job and you're paying them properly. It's everything else around that. That's so important.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Get the basics right. Because if you don't, that will become an issue. But if you want to elevate it above the it's okay to it's extraordinary and I want to stay here and I want to do the great work, you need to think about the experience, and that's the human bit.
My aspiration, Belinda, and I hope one day I'm going to get there, I hope I'm already there, is that everybody who comes to work at HR Locker, that regardless if they're there for a year or 2 years or 10 years, that they've come and they've developed themselves somehow, that they leave, because everybody's going to leave at some stage, whether it's through retirement or whatever natural journey they've gone through, that when they leave, they think, gosh, that was really fun. I really enjoyed working there. And maybe I learned a bit there and I developed myself a bit, and, that they leave in a positive way. So Belinda, we've got our onboarding correct. We've got everything. The person is happy. They've made connections. They've started their job. Now if we go in the lifetime of the employee, and I really like to focus on, I suppose, the career path structure. So not everybody has to become a manager. Some people can become specialists. Some people can become experts in their area. It doesn't have to be a singular approach that to do well, you become a manager. But I do think that the learning and development in the employee experience or the employee life cycle is paramount to the person having a good experience. Mm. And I'd love to hear your opinion in regards to, when I think of learning and development, it doesn't just have to be courses you're paying for. How important do you think learning and development is in regards to today's workforce?
I mean, it's so important. It feels silly to say something, such a bland statement as it's so important. But I think it's vital to organisations. They need to be able to continue to innovate and flex around a really volatile environment. But also, and these things aren't unconnected, what we know is what makes a great experience at work. This research that Emma, my co-author, did, it was literally based on storytelling. So tell us a story about when you had a great experience at work. And this is what this research came down for. And such a significant number of those stories are about personal growth. And as you say, not always I went on an amazing training program. Yes, sometimes, but actually growth happens in the gaps, doesn't it, between the work and in the conversations. And it happens all the time, and we're always learning and evolving. And that's what makes a great culture and a great employee experience, and what makes it so rewarding for people when they can grow. And just that very linear, you do well and then we make you a manager. It's just nonsensical in a lot of cases. I mean, for a lot of people that works well, but for a lot of people that really doesn't. So we need to think about growth in the broadest sense, because as human beings, we love it. We thrive on it.
Yeah, and I definitely think we thrive on it. And and I love that, that growth does not have to mean that you're a manager. Yeah. We always have to have experts. We always have to have generalists. We always have to have senior people in roles. And some people don't want to manage people, and that's totally fine. Mm. But I do think that as humans, we crave the, I suppose not even the recognition, but just that chance to better ourselves a small bit.
Absolutely.
But if we look at recognition then, Belinda, in terms of, I'm always a little bit reticent to pull in kind of your remuneration and your salary into employee experience, even though I do know it is fundamental, because if somebody is getting not paid well or somebody doesn't get what they've been promised, I think that that does ultimately give you a bad experience. Is it something that you tend to bring into that concentration when you're talking about giving a good employee experience, or do you put it in that that just has to be your framework in general of running a company?
I think remuneration, I was giving a talk and earlier in the year, and I think in this is in the UK, and the inflation figures had just come out, and so I would always say it's not about money. Employee experience isn't about money, but it feels nonsensical in a world where, you know, we've got 10% plus inflation. If people can't afford to live and to, you know, look after their families, then of course it becomes a major issue. So put it another way, we need to pay people the right amount for them so money goes off the table, because money will, it would create satisfaction. But actually, when we're talking about employee experience, what we're trying to get to is great, you know, great for the company, great for the nature of the work, and great for the individual. So you need to remove it as a dissatisfaction measure. But paying people more doesn't elevate the experience. So that's remuneration bit. Appreciation is fundamentally part of the Magicka model. You know, when you look at those stories of what makes a great experience at work, feeling appreciated, recognised, seen, and appreciated for your contribution is massively important to people's experience of work. But what appreciation looks like shows up differently for different people. So a story again, going back to one of Emma's stories, which was, you know, an engagement survey said, oh, people don't feel recognised and appreciated. So the company went, I know, we'll develop an awards programme and then we'll have a great big gala dinner and it's all going to be great. So they did this, and then the next year, obviously a year later, not advice, but a year later, we did the same survey. And oh, people still didn't feel appreciated because...
But we had that gala dinner.
Yes. Sometimes it's just about saying thank you. Yeah. It's about people feeling seen and recognised and appreciated. And that can happen in the moment. It doesn't need to happen once a year at a swanky hotel. Yeah. So appreciation is massively important. And remuneration is part of that. But it's, you know, you need to pay people sufficiently well to get that off the table as a factor.
Yeah, and I think that that is the key, Blend, is that you need to, that it's not a driving factor in what you're talking about. You know, so you need to deal with that in a fair way. So that it isn't constantly, instead of the person saying, well, actually, you know, I'd like to develop myself in this area, or maybe I'm actually not happy with my manager, their first thing is saying, I don't get paid enough, you know. Yeah. And so you don't actually get to hear the rest of it either.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's, and you know, interestingly, to your opinion on this, is you touched on it a small bit in regards to everybody likes appreciation in different ways. You know, some people are happy to get a £50 voucher for something saying you did an awesome job, that's great. And somebody else wants to just be able to be told in a morning meeting with the people to say, well, Belinda's done an awesome job today, you know, we're going to give her a high five and give her
exactly.
So maybe just to figure out what way people like to be given. Absolutely. That recognition, right?
Yeah, and actually that whole point is almost the pivotal point of this conversation for me, which is what makes a great employee experience. Ask your people, because they will tell you, because what great experience looks like for one person is different to another. That's not to say that it doesn't happen within constraints. It goes back to this dance of the three elements. What's right for the organization? You know, what's your purpose and your values of this organization? What culture do you need to have, and what experience do you need to create that feels distinctly you? What is the nature of the work? And then what is the nature of your people? What do your people want to need from being here? And your ideal employee experience sits somewhere in the middle of those three things.
You spoke a bit about the economic side of things, and we're in, I suppose, a world of layoffs at the moment with Facebook and Twitter and Stripe. How do you, I suppose, what advice would you give to companies who may be going through that, or maybe having to think about that at this stage, about how to kind of, I suppose, not dampen people's spirits too much? I would 100% agree with you that if you're letting people go, you still want them to leave and have a good, you know, it's a little bit optimistic to say they're going to have a great experience leaving if you're letting them go, but that they're not leaving thinking that, you know, you've pushed them out of the nest, basically.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. We talk a lot in employee experience about the peak end rule, which is that people, if you ask people about their employee experience from their previous job, they will tell you about the best thing that happened, and they'll tell you about not necessarily the worst thing that happened, they'll tell you about the last thing that happened.
Yes,
they might also tell you about the worst as well, but the peak end rule tends to create, there's different models of psychology, right, but they tend to create a really big impact on memory, because obviously experience exists as a memory. So it's the right thing to do to help people leave in the right way, to look after people as best you can. And that's, of course, that's fundamentally the right thing to do, because we're human beings at the end of the day. From a business perspective, it also makes sense to really look after people at the end of the journey with them as well, because people remember that. And we don't, you know, when I started working in this space probably 10 or more years ago, people started talking about this idea of glass box brands, with this idea that before that, organizations were opaque and they could, you know, organizations could treat people in whatever way they wanted because nobody would ever know. But now we just, the world is a lot more transparent than that. And if, you know, if what's happening at Twitter to employees impacts how you feel about that as a platform, as a business, etc., etc., and you know, multiple examples of that. So it's the human thing to do, to look after people, obviously, and it's also a business. It makes no business sense not to look after people also, because it will impact your reputation, which will impact your customer experience, your profitability, everything else, you know, on an ongoing basis.
And I think that's the key, Belinda, is sometimes, you know, employee experience gets kind of thrown in with employee engagement and wellness. And it's like, oh, it's like that HR issue, you know, that we never have to, you know, it's just a fluffy issue. Doesn't really have any business effect or anything like that, which I really disagree with. I think that, you know, you can measure everything in terms of how it's affecting your business. Your bottom line, really, if you want to bring it down to cash at the end of the day, you're talking about Twitter, they've got really bad press from it, their, you know, their shares are dropping, things like that, and purely because they're treating their employees badly. But if you were to look at, you know, if from HR perspective, is how do they measure, how do you measure your experience, your employee experience in a company?
I mean a lot of organizations use an employee net promoter score, which I think makes, you know, if you wanted to boil it all down to something, I think that makes a lot of sense. But actually, if you want it to be actionable, I think it's about understanding what's happening at different bits of the journey. You know, there are levels of employee experience, but where you are in your journey and what's happening to you in relation to the organization at that time, whether you're joining, growing, becoming a first-time manager, returning after a period of parental leave, maybe making a horizontal move, not necessarily, you know, that sort of line manager move, whether you're leaving, you can measure people's experience at all of those touch points. And I think it is about often getting into the granularity of that. You know, having that single KPI or metric is useful, but also keeping an eye on all the contributory factors, because people are on a different part of their journey with an organization at any different time, and understanding people's experience at those different touch points, I think is really, really important. So there's no one size fits all, I'm afraid. It's a bit of a dashboard approach, if you like.
And I think as well, Linda, I don't know, would you agree, is we're part of this kind of, you know, work-life balance, but work-life blend at the moment, that, you know, we've been in people's homes, you know, we do have that remote and hybrid side of things. So whether we like it or not, people's day-to-day lives do affect their work, you know, and like you said, somebody could be back from parental leave or maternity leave, or have somebody sick at home or things like that. So those kind of personal touches, how important is that to employee experience? It's just really figuring out what's going on with people at home.
Yeah. I mean, massively important. We talk a lot about moments that matter, or sometimes they're called different things in customer experience and employee experience, but moments that matter. It's the difference between thinking about, you know, a life cycle stage, like I'm becoming a first time manager, versus this literally specific moment in time. And that could be the moment you walk through the door for the first time, or the moment that, going back to Emma, she's got some brilliant stories. She always tells us the story about when she told her line manager she was having a baby, and the line manager's response was off the scale, shockingly bad. I mean, I won't even go there. It's not my story, but it's those microcosms moments that stand out. And I remember my own, you know, a previous company, which, you know, had lots of different experiences there, but actually one of the most lasting experiences for me was when I was moving house and getting divorced, and all the life stuff, you know, it emerges into one, and my line manager's response to me in the moment was so off the scale positive, okay. So human, that it almost, I can't think of the word,
know, it puts things into perspective.
The rest of it sort of blends into the background. It's like that moment, and it was a momentary moment, literally a momentary moment. You know, everything crystallized down into one thing, and those are the things that we remember. So you're right, it is being really cognizant of the whole person and what are those sort of critical moments that happen to people that we need to be thinking about, you know, first day of child at school, losing a pet, you know, all of those things.
Lots of things, yeah. I mean, and that is a good point. I remember when my eldest son started school and I was thinking, I was at home panicking, how am I going to bring him to school for 9 o'clock? And I also have to start work at 9 o'clock, and I don't know how I'm going to do this. This is really panicking me. And spoke to our CEO and he was like, that's fine, just come in after you've dropped him to school. It's no problem. I was like, okay, so this is my own internal issue I've been flashing about. But it, you know, in terms of that, I suppose, dealing with my own personal issues, like, you know, ultimately, what does the business want? They want you to go to work and be able to go to work. They don't want you to lose, you know, to leave because of a 10-minute journey you're going to have to make.
Yeah. You know, isn't it interesting? Our experience, you know, how long we've been working in the workplace, and I think that's interesting how far, hopefully, it's come that your expectation was this is a deal breaker. There's no way you can possibly solve this. It's like, what about the years of your experience, not necessarily this employee you're talking about, but a previous employee that has got you to that point that 10 minutes a day means you're going to have to leave work? I think what's happening economically is really interesting now. So I tell you, I'm riffing on this a little bit. When COVID struck, I was thinking, I'm banging up the wrong tree, barking up the wrong tree at the moment. You know, nobody's going to care about employee experience. Everybody's just going to be bloody grateful they've still got a job. Yeah. Turns out, actually, employee experience massively went up the agenda for lots and lots of reasons, because people need to deflect and innovate and work through challenges. And actually, the way that you do that is by, you know, creating positive emotions in people and making sure they feel looked after and respected and all the good things that they need. And I think I'm waiting for the sort of flurry of articles, you should say, with layoffs in the tech sector in particular. I'm waiting for the flurry of articles that start saying, oh, employee experience has had its day. Nobody cares about this. You know, Elon Musk tells people where to work and that's going to be the way for everybody. I just don't think we're going to swing back to where experience doesn't matter, because, again, all of the data shows that if you can balance what the company needs, what the work needs and what people need, then actually, yes, people stay longer, but they're more productive, they're more engaged, your customer experience goes up, your company's more innovative, etc., etc. All of those metrics point at the fact that the experience you create for people matters, whether that's your employees or your customers.
Yeah, and I think as well, Belinda, we're talking about people are cost saving and things like that. If you've got a bad employee experience, people are going to leave, they're not going to do a good job, your customers aren't going to be happy. For us, even a small thing is we get a lot of referrals, recruitment referrals from employees, which is great. That means, you know, it presumably, well, I believe that you're not going to refer your friend to work for a company if you hate working there. That cuts down on your recruitment fees or even your onboarding as well. So there's lots of cost saving, and I don't want to put a monetary value on it either. But if you have a bad employee experience, it costs you. If you have a good one, you're going to have, there is a monetary value to it if you want to put it in black and white terms. My final question for you, Belinda, is that, actually it's my second last question, I won't lie, is I'm still surprised that how many companies just don't care. And do you think, and you touched on this briefly, in an economic downturn, are we just going to see people not caring?
I hope not. I'm going to go optimistic, which is for the reasons, just like with COVID, people needed to flex, pivot, innovate, come up with entirely new business models almost overnight. And the way that companies were able to navigate that and take and get that from and with their people was by looking after them in the broader sense, thinking about the experience and what enables people to do meaningful work and all of that things. So I hope that the proof points are there sufficiently strongly now that we can't just switch it off. We can't just go back to treating people like mechanisms in cogs in a system, that we have to think about people's experience. Of course, that also touched on what we coming back full circle, what we mean by employee experience. So I worked with a client last year and she was running a infrastructure business. And her first point employee experience was, I don't believe in any of that. I don't believe in cupcakes and all of that. It's like, yeah, no, neither do I. I'm not talking about perks. Okay, we're not talking about cupcakes and beanbags and football tables here. We're talking about how we make people feel when they come to work, whether they can do meaningful work, whether they have an impact, whether they can grow and they have some element of autonomy. With that, that's what we're talking about. We are not talking about cupcakes and beanbags.
So if you were to give one thought for people who've listened to the podcast about employee experience, so one kind of takeaway, what would it be?
Talk to your people. Talk to your people. And when I say that, what I don't mean is run an engagement survey once a year. Yes. And then cut the data and sell it to managers and then probably never mention it again. What I'm talking about is ongoing, continuous conversations with your people and when they feel at best. Their work, what enables them to do their best work. And they're not going to say cupcakes and pay me more money to enable me to do my best work. I mean, we've talked about money, but it's not the small things around the edges. It's about treating people like people and allowing them to do their best work.
Yeah, and I love that. I think that I couldn't agree with you more. It doesn't have to be this 5,000 page document of how you're going to implement employee experience.
Yeah,
it's just about being open with people, right?
Yeah,
figuring out what works.
Absolutely.
So Belinda, what is the best way for people to contact you if anybody wants to have a chat and follow up?
If you want to read more about this, you can buy the book as Answer. It's EX by Design, which is my co-author Emma and I wrote and was published last year. But yeah, LinkedIn is a great place to connect with me. There is actually only one Belinda Ganaway on LinkedIn as well. So if you buy Belinda Ganaway, it's going to be me.
We'll put the link down and the link to the book as well. So thank you so much for taking the time out. Hope you're COVID-free pretty soon.
Thank you very much.
For taking the time out while you feel ill as well. So really
it's
do
my
appreciate
pleasure.
It.
Thank you for inviting me on.
Thanks for listening. Check us out at hrlocker.com. The show was hosted by Christelle Rinn and produced by Jenny Martin. Subscribe to catch the latest episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. If you'd like to feature, get in touch by emailing us at marketing@hrlocker.com. You can also follow HR Locker on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.